Quarterback back at the five, steps up, gets drilled. Yes, sir, he gets mashed. And that is going to be the ball game. 6-5-4-3. They can't snap it. They can't stop it. They can't win it. Alabama wins the ball game.
Gary Thomas, linebacker, Alabama.
He was a nightmare for people that had to try to prepare for him because he had unique skills.
Just go get the quarterback. I felt sorry for some of those poor tackles that came in and had to go against him because they didn't realize what they were getting themselves into.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun. Woo! Woo!
Son, I got to do better than this.
Lights out.
Back in the cornerback, it's just like you devastate a city, or you cream a multitude of people. I mean, it's just like you put all the offensive players in one bag, and I just take a baseball bat and beat on the bag. So each time he came over there, I tried to tear his damn head off.
Let's play some football! Let's play some football!
The pressure is on. This is Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Focus on what you want to do, what you want to accomplish. Think about that. Don't think about how you feel, how tired you are, how hot it is. You got to push yourselves on the field when you're playing football.
It's my honor to present the National Championship Trophy to Coach Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide.
To me, this is the ultimate team. All these guys bought into everything they needed to do to be the best players that they could be. There's more togetherness on this team than almost any team that we've ever had. And they had to overcome and persevere so much adversity through this season. And they've done it magnificently. And I'm so proud of this group for what they've been able to accomplish in going undefeated and winning the national championship.
Streaming live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and the Tide 100.9 app. Here is your host of Off the Edge, Jacob Harrison.
Hello there, good morning, welcome in to Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Jacob Harrison here with you, digital managing editor of Town Square Media Tuscaloosa. It's Mason Woods, Hunter Brantley, Michael Bronner all behind the glass helping us out. We're a week away from the NFL draft and got some good news this morning. Did you see it, Mason? See my reaction? The Pittsburgh Steelers are now the betting favorite, according to FanDuel Sportsbook, to land Malik Willis. It's a good day. It's a good day. I still think they have to trade up to do it. I'm okay with that. Not a lot of Steelers fans are okay with that. They're too conservative.
What do you think they'd have to give up to get into a position where they can get him?
I think the trade that sticks in my mind is the fifth overall pick with the New York Giants, and you can give up this year's first, 84, third round pick, and either a first or a second next year. I think one of those fits the calculator, right? One of them kind of gives a little bit more, and I don't remember if it's a second round pick or not. But yeah, I mean, you don't have to give up that much to move from 20 to 5, especially with a team that has multiple first-round picks and might not be that crazy about this year's draft, might be a little bit more favorable of next year's draft, especially with a team like the Giants. You know, like, they're giving Daniel Jones another year, but do you really expect him to turn into the elite superstar you need him to be a championship contender? You know, and that team has a lot of problems as it is anyway. So I think that's the one that my mind goes to. Obviously, there's a bunch of different ways for it to go because I mentioned this the other day on a Steelers podcast that, you know, the Panthers might move up just a couple of spots to block the Steelers That's very, very possible. You know, it's a lot easier to move from 6 to 3, you know, than it is from 20 to 5. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited. Soon we'll get to see where the likes of Evan Neal and Jamison Williams go. Christian Harris, you know, all these guys, Jalen Armour Davis, Fedarian Mathis, Brian Robinson. And it's going to be a fun time. And they're going to add to the pool of money that Alabama professionals under the Nick Saban era have made in the NFL. He said that they have collectively made $1.7 billion. And he also said that the athletes on the football team from last year made more money than anybody else in college football. And this is a big deal, right? Like, it's very easy to look at the entire scope of what college football is today and talk about how broken it is. But you, as an Alabama fan, see a lot of the benefits because Nick Saban's always going to win, right? He warns you every single time, warns the college football world, that is, every single time. Are you sure you want to do that? Are you sure? You know, it's like when you're playing Monopoly with your kids and they're like, I want to buy a house for this property. And you're like, that's literally all the money you got. Are you sure you want to do that? Are you sure? You're going to have a hard time making your money back, right? And the kid goes ahead and does it anyway. And you never land on your kid's property. You never have to pay the taxes. He never gets the rent. He never, you know, gets the opportunity. And you own the railroads and parkway. And he lands there, has to pay out the rest, and he doesn't have it. So he's got to sell the house. And now he's completely upside down. He's lost the game. He's lost Monopoly, right? Thought he was making this strong play to be able to resurrect himself in the game. And he's completely wrong. Completely wrong. Miscalculated. Thought that luck would be on his side as well and was completely wrong. It happens, right? You ever played Monopoly with somebody younger than 10? They have no idea what they're doing. I'm almost 30 and I have no idea what I'm doing sometimes, but hey, I won the last game I played. But there's always going to be the benefits to it, right? Well, every time we talk about the transfer portal, we talk about how Nick Saban's going to win. He's going to have a net positive, right? Every time it comes to the NIL, this is only going to work in Alabama's favor. One of the few teams that didn't have a NIL collective to help with the NIL process, and Alabama's players made more money than anybody else? Well, that has a lot to do with having Bryce Young, who is one of very few active football players that if you go to On3 where they have the NIL 300, Bryce Young's one of the very few active college football players that's in the top 10 of that. Most of them are basketball or high school athletes who have not yet signed yet, like Arch Manning. So that'll tip the scales a little bit. But when we're looking at this whole thing, when the guy who's able to take advantage the best is saying that it is broken, when that's the conversation, that's when you have to understand that he wants what's best for the sport just as well. He wants to dominate it. He wants to be the best there ever was and do it. But it's got to be done the right way for the sake of the sport. And this is where we come to a bit of a weird space, right? Because I'm going to play both of these clips from Nick Saban. And the first, he was asked about the transfer portal and developing players. And he transitions that into talking about how the alumni that he has pushed through to the NFL have made all this money, and how it's beneficial for guys to sit and wait and develop at Alabama. Alabama's the best at developing players. You don't have to argue very hard against that. And then on the other side, he talks about, well, we do the NIL collective so that it's fair for everybody here. And I'm not trying to say, I don't if I sound like I'm trying to catch Saban in something here, I'm not. I'm trying to just take in the full picture. Let's play both of these clips and start to analyze what he's talking about and how we get to a space where we're understanding what the next steps are for NIL that actually do make sense. So let's play the first one about NIL, about Alabama's players making more money than anybody. Here's Nick Saban from a couple of days ago talking about his players making more money through NIL than anybody else. I think we got it. Okay.
It really hasn't, you know, it hasn't changed at all, you know. I said in the very beginning that, you know, the concept of name, image, and likeness for players to go out and get representation and be able to work and make money using their name, image, and likeness is a good thing for the players. And I think that was the original intent. Now, people have started, you know, these collectives that raise money to create opportunities for players. I think that's an unintended consequence. We didn't do that last year, and our guys made more money than anybody in college football on their own, you know, representing themselves, creating a good image, being good players, creating value for themselves. So we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to give everybody the same opportunity. Everybody in our organization will have the same opportunity, and then they can go earn as much as they want. We give everybody the same medical attention. We give everybody the same nutrition. We give everybody the same academic, support. They have the same scholarship, so we're going to give them the same opportunity in name, image, and likeness, and then they can go earn whatever they want. But I don't know if it's a sustainable model for me to start picking and choosing who gets what opportunities.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's how he closed the press conference. But go a couple questions before that when he's asked about the transfer portal and the NFL players that go to the next level and they've made $1.7 billion. And think of how many guys from Alabama that have not been successful in the NFL. But that's still a stupid amount of money, right? So what is Nick Saban doing in all this? Listen to this clip from Nick Saban as well from the same event.
I'm not in a position to really, play that. I mean, everybody has an opportunity to go wherever they want to go, whenever they want to go. And if we think that's good for the development of young people, I guess it's okay. But I think everyone that's successful in life, has resiliency and perseverance. And sometimes resiliency and perseverance, and we've had a lot of guys, Mac Jones, was in a program for, 3 years and worked and developed so he could be successful. B-Rob was a fifth-year guy that didn't play much and had a great career. Now he has an opportunity to play at the next level. Somebody gave me a stat that our players have made $1.7 billion playing in the NFL since 2007. And all those guys didn't play when they were freshmen. They didn't all play when they were sophomores. They didn't even all play when they were juniors. But they all developed. And I think that's what college is all about, is you're supposed to focus on your development. All right? Because we've always said, how much value can we create for young people by getting them to do the right things, by looking at college as a destination where you develop a career off the field to prepare yourself for the day you can't play football, and can you develop a career as a football player? So that's what we've always been able to do, and we've had a lot of people do it very successfully, and hopefully the people in our organization will buy into doing things the right way and see that they have an opportunity to do the same.
If you've listened to me a couple of times, especially during the offseason, what Nick Saban's doing is recruiting. The answer was probably very, very obvious. Of course he's recruiting. But it is slightly bizarre that in one space where we're talking about how NIL is not working, but we're going to use the NIL earnings to say, yes, we're making a ton. And we're going to use the transfer portal for our benefits. We're going to bring in a Tyler Steen, and we're going to recruit a Tyler Harrell and see if that can be the benefit to us. And in the past, we've gotten Eli Ricks and Jahmyr Gibbs and Landon Dickerson and all these other guys, and it's always worked out. And we're also going to point out how much ridiculous money our guys have made. All of that is recruiting. Sure, the transfer portal as it exists right now is not the best for college football. It works for Nick Saban, though. NIL right now is not what's great for the way that it exists. This isn't me turncoating against NIL. The way that it currently exists is not a long-term viability for the success of college football. It works for Nick Saban, though. And that's not to say he's taking advantage of the system. He's doing what he's supposed to do. His job is to win games, and however the rules are put in place, good. That's what you should do. Because combating that and choosing to not evolve and to moan and complain and not use it to your advantage at the same time is foolish. So the other day, saw the Athletics article, and it came with this graphic of a coach, a Power 5 head coach, that said, you're really guessing that this 18-year-old guy who has proven zero is worth $1 million from somebody? What the are we talking about? How ignorant are you? How ignorant can you be? That 18-year-old guy hasn't proven zero. If he had proven zero, you wouldn't watch his tape to recruit him. And in the past, as we talked about yesterday to close the show, Andrew Brandt, highly respected in the sports media world, heard from a longtime NFL agent this week over NIL. He said, Andrew, we used to have to fund these kids for years until their NFL contract. Now the school boosters do it. It's saving us so much money. It's awesome. And a former NFL player came under that and sarcastically agreed with him. Because agents or boosters or whoever the hell else for the past forever have already been paying those kids. So for you to suddenly want to cry that you have a morality system that says that this isn't okay, that paying these athletes what they have earned for themselves is in itself ridiculous and illogical, you're fooling yourself. And you're proving to yourself to be bad at what you do, because what you should be doing as a head coach is watching the best in the world do what he does, and that's evolve to the situation, say that it should still be fixed in some manner, but also use it to his advantage so that you can win games, make money, maximize the potential of your athletes, and see them go on to be a part of $1.7 billion in money at the next level. Or you can cry anonymously to The Athletic and allow them to put graphics together where you sound sensational and saying, what the F are we doing paying 18-year-olds who have earned every dollar that they're being given? Because Nick Saban, in that same breath, you want to talk about kids have earned zero? Nick Saban's players earn more money than anybody else without a collective's help. Now they have a collective's help, and they're going to wash everybody else out the board. Use logic. Think it through. We'll take a break. We got to go talk to Joey Blackwell next. Won't be as long as the conversation we usually have with him. So if you're on hold, stick with us or call back. We'll definitely take phone calls because there's a lot there. We'll be back here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama sports.
Gossip. Work is a part of all of us. Working drives us to push beyond what we thought was imaginable and allows us to come together again for the things that really matter. That's why the Alabama Department of Labor and the Alabama Career Center System is here to help you discover bigger opportunities than ever before. Visit your local career center or alabamaworks.alabama.gov. Funding provided by the USDOL, PTA, and Federal WIOA, an Equal Opportunity Employer Program. Auxiliary aids and services available upon request. Brought to you by this station and the Alabama Broadcasters Association.
Work is a part of all of us. We know that the world around us has changed, And that's why the Alabama Department of Labor is here to get you back to working hard. Work is a part of all of us. Let us help you get back to it by visiting your local career center or alabamaworks.alabama.gov. Funding provided by the USDOL, ETA, and Federal WIOA and Equal Opportunity Employer Program. Auxiliary aids and services available upon request. Brought to you by this station and the Alabama Broadcasters Association.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A warm afternoon. The sky partly to mostly sunny. The high today 82. Mostly fair tonight, the low 59. And the warm-up continues tomorrow and Saturday. Mostly sunny both days. The high tomorrow 84. The high Saturday at 86. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 73 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Follow Off the Edge on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube for live streams and instant analysis. Off the Edge with Jacob Harrison continues.
Back here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. We'll talk with Joey Blackwell, Alabama Central, here in just a minute. Get his thoughts on A-Day, this NIL High Tide Collective, as well as an update on Bama baseball. Then we'll get to your phone calls after that. First, let me tell you real quick about Alabama Vintage, alabamavtg.com. Check them out there online. Spend $60 and you get free shipping on your order anywhere in the world, man. That's a heck of a deal because you can find some serious value for $60. With the NFL draft coming up in a week, maybe you want to catch up and get a jersey to help celebrate because he's got jerseys of your favorite teams. I promise you. It's all in stock. It's all there. It's 2210 University Boulevard under the Crimson Awning across from City Hall in the heart of downtown T-Town. It's on Instagram at Alabama VTG. Let's head out to the phone lines. Welcome in our good friend, Joey Blackwell, beat writer for Bama Central, the Sports Illustrated affiliate of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Joey, what's going on, man?
Doing well, Jacob. How are you this Thursday?
I'm doing all right. Got a little fired up in the first segment talking about NIL and Nick Saban's evolutions. Obviously getting to you a little bit later here, but we got to start with A-Day before we get into what Nick Saban had to say and start up front with the offensive line that allowed 15 sacks as a collective, both crimson and white. But the starting offensive line was the one that gave up the bulk of that, giving up 10. Tyler Steen is going to come in here and compete. And I've been foolishly saying he hadn't played left tackle at Vanderbilt. That was absolutely incorrect. So I do anticipate he may fill that left tackle spot. But these quarterbacks are running for their lives, and it's a good thing they're all athletic. But this is a concern to be had for fans and for those of us supporting the Tide.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I do think that Tyler Steen coming in is going to help out a lot. You know, we also have to remember that they did have you know, a couple of guys that were out with, you know, with injuries, including Emil Ekior. So hopefully we'll see them in the fall and they'll be able to provide some much needed relief to this offensive line. It is concerning, you know, but I did like, you know, some play from what I saw. I thought Kendall Randolph did a decent job. I thought J.C. Latham, both the tackles, I thought Sterling did all right, but we have to kind of step back and remember who they're facing. You know, they're playing, you know, edge rushers like Will Anderson and Dallas Turner, and they're not going to be facing players like that every single week. But at the same time, you giving up 10 sacks over the course of a game is never something that you want to see, no matter who's on the opposite side of the line.
No doubt about it. And I agree with that. It's something that I have taken solace in, is at least Alabama doesn't have to play Alabama's pass rush. And we know that this is a relatively easy schedule. However, when the playoffs do come around, you're probably going to have to face some sort of pass rush then, but at least you have time to develop. That's a long ways away. Let's talk about this year's pass rush, though. Tony Sakalas was one of the first ones to tell us about it, your friend over there at Bama Central. The fact that there's going to be a package in pass rushing situations where Dallas Turner, Will Anderson, and Chris Braswell are all on the field at the same time. And, oh, by the way, guys like Jamil Burrows and Jeremiah Alexander and a handful of others were showing out at A-Day as well. There's a lot of pass rush on this team. Last year, 57 sacks. And this year, getting over 60 doesn't sound impossible. It sounds like you should.
Yeah, no doubt. having Anderson on the field by himself is already terrifying enough for an offensive line, but when you throw in Dallas Turner and Chris Braswell, it gets kind of overwhelming. When we also have to forget that they're being accompanied by Turner and Henry Toto behind. Mm. So really, it's a defensive scheme that really doesn't let up. There's a reason that Will Anderson was held out of the second half of the game, and it wasn't because he was hurt. It was because he was putting on a hurt on the offensive line. It's remarkable to think about, just how far Will Anderson's come. Obviously, he was a stellar player in high school. He's been nothing but outstanding his first two seasons at Alabama. But, he was impressive in A-Day, and you have to think about how these are offensive linemen that he has to go up against every single day in practice. There's nobody on the planet that knows his game better than those guys that are having a lineup opposite him. And if he's still able to get past them on almost every play and make Bryce Young scramble on almost every play that he's out there, it's going to be, I'm very, very excited to see what he's going to be able to do against, players this fall that have only had, either one game experience against him or even less than that, like watching film against him. So, but combine him with Braswell and Turner, and it's really going to be a sight to behold.
Yeah, that's a solid point too, with Henry Toto having a solid blitzer like he is, and then you throw in the fact that this defensive backfield is impeccable. I mean, it is unreal across the board. So when the defensive backs are locking it down, I mean, the quarterback's just got nowhere to go. If feel like Bryce Young did last Saturday, that's for sure. But with these quarterbacks, it's bizarre to me, but also awesome at the same time, that all three quarterbacks, despite the pass rush, despite throwing each of them less than 50%, having some accuracy issues because of that pressure, we still came out of A-Day praising all three of these quarterbacks for their abilities. All three showing athleticism. We know what Bryce Young's capable of. But I saw with Jalen Milroe a very matured quarterback, a guy that I trust throwing the football if he is called into action. And with Ty Simpson, I was pleasantly surprised with his athleticism, his arm strength as well.
Yeah, Jalen Milroe, I was very impressed by what I saw from him. There were several plays where he scrambled, where he could have gotten 30, 40 yards had it been a live game situation. Mm-hmm. There was also, that I think it would have been a 13-yard run to the end zone, but they called it a tackle, which I'm pretty sure that if he was, no doubt he was touched. But at the same time, even in a real game scenario, I'm pretty sure he could have gotten out of that situation.
Yeah, so, Monkel Goodwin's still trying to tape up his ankles from that one.
Yeah, exactly. I was very impressed by him, and he was very accurate. He made some, he had a lot of connections with Christian Leary. But a lot of those passes, people praise Leary on the catch, but like there were some passes that Milroe was having hit, a very small, area, and was really accurate with his passes. So, obviously Bryce Young is going to be the starter this year. But Jalen Milroe really made a case to, kind of be the heir apparent, should Ty and those things not work out.
Yeah. It's kind of funny that, on Twitter, since Milroe got here, he's kind of been treated a little bit like Mac Jones was, where it's like, I don't know if he can be a starter. He's not a five-star, had to develop. He was going to have to sit as well, and this is the era of college football where quarterbacks do not sit. And I think we're seeing a guy that is maturing in every possible facet of being a quarterback, and he's very much ready to take the reins over next year when Bryce heads into the NFL, and that leads to a domino effect of its own with Ty Simpson and Arch Manning and all the other quarterbacks that Nick Saban is interested down the road. But nonetheless, I think you feel confident for the next 2 years at least. Speaking of the transfer portal, and we mentioned it as well with the defensive backs, I mean, you had a lot of starters that were playing for the Crimson team in the defensive backfield, not to mention defensive linemen. We've already seen one there with Stephon Wynn heading to the transfer portal. we anticipate that Nick Saban's going to bring in a few names to accompany Tyler Steen, but it also means you're likely to lose a few names as well. You anticipate the transfer portal impacting Alabama a little bit on the defensive side?
Not necessarily on the defensive side. I have heard, some stuff about Tyler Harrell and his potential to come here on offense, the wide receiver. On the defensive side, not hearing a lot right now. It is starting to kind of get later in the year, but later in the first, quickly approaching summer. But I haven't really heard that much on the defensive side. We do know that the defensive line is a position group that's very talent heavy. There's a lot of experience on the defensive line this year, which is something that they've kind of been lacking over the past few seasons. So it wouldn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me if Steve Stephon Lynn entered the transfer portal just because there is a lot of competition for those positions right now. And when you also have combined that with the way that Alabama's defense is structured right now, there really aren't defensive ends. There's more so edge rushers on the edge that kind of play like ends, which we already talked about in Will Anderson and Dallas Turner. And when you use those players like that, that lowers the amount of defensive linemen you really need in the game. Yep. So the competition becomes all the more fierce for those defensive tackle spots and those tackle positions.
Yeah, and then you get freshmen like Jaheim Otis that come in, and they look like they're ready to go pretty quickly. And they lose 30 pounds in just a couple of months. That'll make you tremble a little bit. On the other side, the big name that Alabama lost, a lot of people around here don't consider it necessarily a negative, but nonetheless, Ajayi Hall is going to go play for the Texas Longhorns. And Joe actually pointed it out to me this morning. If you think about it, especially since yesterday, I said I didn't anticipate Hall would even play against Alabama this year. Texas comes to town the following season. Steve Sarkisian keeps pulling these Alabama guys. It kind of is what it is. But with Ajayi Hall, with all the noise that surrounded that, it feels like it'll be a little bit personal. What do you think of Hall heading over there to play with Sark?
Well, I think it's a good fit for them. They already have a couple of talented wide receivers over there, and Xavier Worthy, got a really solid freshman year last year. They also have the ex Wyoming transfer of Isaiah Nayor over there. They got all out of the transfer portal. I think he fits in very well with them. And combine that with another former Alabama player, Jaleel Billingsley, a tight end there. Texas is really forming a decent passing attack. So I think it's a big get for them. Obviously, he's also familiar with Steve Sarkisian and his style of play and the offense that he runs there. So I think it'll be kind of a plug and play situation with Hall. No doubt he'll benefit from getting a lot more playing time there than I think he would have at Alabama this year, especially with all the personal stuff that was going on in that situation. So wish him nothing but the best. I'm sure he'll do well, but I am definitely not unfollowing him on social media because I can't wait to see what he's going to post over the next couple months.
Hey, and if you want a treat, no endorsements, but go check out Barstool Alabama's tweet about Ajayi Hall.
Gosh, I actually, it's funny. I don't really share tweets that often amongst my friends from other outlets, but when Barstool Bama tweeted out this morning, I immediately copied that link.
that was incredible. Strongly, strongly encourage any listener that's got the Twitter account, man. Go check that. That was hilarious. I'm pretty sure Jai Hall would laugh at that one too. So, back to the NIL. This is, what I ranted about in the first segment. Nick Saban was asked about the transfer portal and kind of pivoted that into praising his program for Alabama professionals making $1.7 billion in the NFL. And then was asked about High Tide Collective and saying, well, we didn't even need it last year. Our players made more money than anybody else. What do you see kind of the benefit here for Nick Saban to kind of do monkey see monkey, monkey do with the collective, if it's not fully necessary? Just thoughts on High Tide and Nick Saban's comments from the other day.
I'll give you one word, recruiting.
Yep.
I think that by going out there and talking about how, obviously, Saban's not against the collective. At least I don't believe so. But by making the point that the players did just fine before the collective even existed, I think that's a really subtle flex as to the money earning potential that players have at Alabama. And if you're a recruit and you see something like that, you know, that's definitely going to turn your head. Obviously, NIL, once again, we talked about this last week, it can't be used in an official capacity for recruiting. But as long as players are allowed to talk about it, as long as coaches are allowed to talk about it, you're going to get these subtle nods and subtle hints and, you know, kind of weird flex, but okay moment, you know, and because that's, you know, that's the name of the game. And so I kind of saw it as a recruiting spiel, and even more so when he was talking about the $1.7 billion that players have brought in over the past, you know, however many years from Alabama in the NFL. That's just another flex that, you know, if you come to Alabama, we can develop you into an NFL, you know, caliber player. And here's the potential money that you're leaving on the table if you don't come play for me and play for a school like that, like us. So, you know, but one word to sum it all up, recruiting. That's what I have to say about that.
Well, and kind of the point that I hinged on was, you know, a couple days ago, The Athletic put out an article about the NIL arms race, and they accompanied that article with a graphic of a Power Five head coach being quoted as saying, "You're really guessing that this 18-year-old guy who has proven zero is worth $1 million from somebody. What the F are we doing about it? Or what the F are we talking about?" is what he said. And it's to me, that's a bizarre stance, because Nick Saban in both those questions talked about what was wrong, but then still used them to his benefit, all within the same answer, to say, hey, this is why it's still a good thing for us, why it can be a good thing for you, young man, if you come to the University of Alabama. For all of the chaos in college football, Nick Saban's ability to evolve with it while also providing suggestions to not make himself overpowered, it's both a very wholesome thing to watch, but it's also wildly intelligent on his part and foolish on the rest of the league that just wants to complain about it.
Yeah, and one thing that got me fired up, because I read that article you referred to as well, and I read that quote, and one thing that got me fired up is, like, when he was talking about proving zero, it's like, what the heck do you mean by proving zero? If this guy proved zero, you wouldn't be watching his film right now. You wouldn't be watching the hard work that he's poured into. You wouldn't be considering giving him a scholarship or the fact that he could potentially earn NIL money. Like, so the fact that you're saying that this player has proven absolutely zero, That's asinine, in my opinion, to say that, because, I mean, there are players out there that prove zero. I'm a perfect example. I wasn't recruited to play football for a D1 school. I played high school football. I didn't have any scholarship offers because, guess what? I wasn't good. I didn't prove myself. But there are players out there, you know, like the players that these D1 coaches look at and look at their tape, that they, the fact that they're just saying that they've proven zero, that really, really rubbed me the wrong way, as I'm sure it did a lot of people.
Oh, it definitely did me as well. And that would be like the Jacksonville Jaguars drafting Aiden Hutchinson next week with the first overall pick and telling him, you're going to make $7.25 an hour, which is minimum wage, because you haven't proven anything in the NFL. You've proven zero. See how asinine that is? How ridiculous that is? It's exactly the same thing. And you can hinge on the idea that it's amateur sports. And I'll tell you that if you're buying and supporting and watching college football, you are helping to make sure that it's not an amateur sport. It's semi-professional at that point. And these kids have earned every dollar that they're getting. Joey, let's talk Alabama baseball. Disappointing loss to UAB just a few days ago. Kind of, you know, it's baseball. The tumultuous nature of it is something that's come to be expected. Overall, I think any Bama baseball follower should feel pretty excited about this team still.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Alabama right now is 6-5 in Tuesday games played so far this year, and fortunately they only have two more. Tuesday's been a day of the week that they really haven't done well, and they, you know, have now lost to UAB both at Regents Field and in and Tuscaloosa. So not a good look, but at the same time, you know, they're putting together some really quality SEC wins, and those are the ones that are really going to make a huge difference in the, you know, if you're going to make a regional. They have a weekend series this weekend against a solid number 10 ranked Georgia team. Georgia that's really kind of come about over these past few weekends here. And they did also lose their Tuesday game, but so they'll be looking looking for blood as well. It should be a really fun series. You know, we only have, I think, 5 weekends of regular season college baseball left. So if you have time, come to the Joe. There's going to be a really lot of good teams coming to town in the next few weeks.
Yeah, the summer is quickly approaching, but there's plenty to be excited about as the summer approaches for this baseball team. I think there's reason to be a little bit surprised by the nature of it, but and at the very least, you got to soak it in and just be excited and go along for the ride, especially with how difficult the SEC is. Joey Blackwell at Blackwell Sports on the Twitter account, the beat writer for Bama Central, a Sports Illustrated affiliate of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Joey, we always appreciate your time, man. Next time we talk to you, it'd be NFL Draft Day. We'll be real excited.
Absolutely, Jacob. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Joey Blackwell helping us out there. We'll take a break. If you want to call back in, 205-342-9904. We'll continue the conversation here on Off the Edge. Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Work is a part of all of us. We know that the world around us has changed, and that's why the Alabama Department of Labor is here to get you back to working hard. Work is a part of all of us. Let us help you get back to it by visiting your local career center or alabamaworks.alabama.gov. Funding provided by the USDOL, ETA, and Federal WIOA, and Equal Opportunity Employer Program. Auxiliary aids and services available upon request. Brought to you by this station and the Alabama Broadcasters Association.
We aren't going anywhere. Off the Edge is available in the podcast center on Tide100.9.com.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning brainwash minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Back here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. I don't know if you're following this in the NFL. I know me and Mason are. Deebo Samuel. Listen, if you follow fantasy football at all, you know Deebo Samuel.
I wish the Jets would just go ahead and make it happen so that they can quit worrying about A.J. Brown.
Right, yeah. We all have our reasons, apparently. But you remember yesterday, as soon as that broke, I immediately went to the Le'Veon Bell conversation. Well, that man himself has weighed in on that conversation. Le'Veon Bell tweeting out, yesterday, I believe Deebo is basically getting punished for doing too much and helping the team win. Deebo just needs to stay out of the backfield. And then said, if Deebo doesn't play this year, one thing the 49ers are going to make sure of is to feed someone else the ball and make it seem as if they didn't need Deebo. When in reality, we all know the truth, but if Deebo doesn't play, they'll try and make it seem like the backup is just as good. So, James Conner caught a little side hustle there from Le'Veon Bell.
Caught a stray from Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah. But it's all business, too. And we talked about, you know, when that news broke, it's like Le'Veon made the right business call, I think, in saying, listen, I catch as many passes as the top 5% of wide receivers in this league and rush for as many yards as the top 5% of running backs in this league. Pay me more than just as a running back. And while the speculation has been more about Debo's usage. And here's the thing. We all love Deebo Samuel because of his usage, right? A wide receiver that can play running back and then go right back the very next play and play wide receiver and like really have the craft of both positions is insane, right? And maybe there was some thought for folks when Tyreek Hill came out, because Tyreek Hill was drafted as a running back, right? Out of West Alabama. So it was, how do you fit these guys in? And for a moment you think, well, maybe it's the evolution of the sport, maybe you find a way to have those guys be utilized, because what we see now more than ever, running backs catching passes out of the backfield, and Le'Veon Bell was one of the guys that started that, but Alvin Kamara is one of the guys that really shows you just how special that can make your offense, because you can have a bad wide receiver room but have great receiving stats because a running back is able to pick up all that slack and catch 90 passes for nearly 1,000 yards and 6 touchdowns, right? And that's a huge boon for your team. So if you've got a wide receiver that can catch 80 passes for over 1,000 yards and maybe 10 touchdowns, but on the ground can also pick up like 600 rushing yards, because your running backs were completely decimated by injury. The 49ers have had some of the worst injury luck over the past couple of seasons that I've ever seen. But nonetheless, like, you're capable of doing that, and you don't have to go full Ty Montgomery and change your position to be a running back wearing number 88 and eventually just fall off the face of the planet. There's a lot of excitement in that. So the fair usage of players, I guess, is why we won't see that evolution. But nonetheless, I mean, Deebo Samuel is a proven commodity. And if you have an NFL team, you want Deebo Samuel. You want to find a way to make that one happen. It'd be weird to see him anywhere else, though. And again, it's another factor of completely disrupting the wide receiver market, because it does, at the end of the day, have something to do with money. And the way I see it on the Steelers side of things is, like, you know, Deontay Johnson has a bad reputation for drops. And guess who drops more balls than Deontay Johnson per capita? Deebo Samuel. So again, Deebo goes to the front office after Deebo gets paid and says, I'm better than Deebo. And what do? How do you turn your guys away? Makes it very, very difficult to be able to anticipate these wide receivers even more, especially when you got the personalities that are reminiscent of an Ajayi Hall. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll close up the show here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide sports.
My care. The plot.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A warm afternoon, the sky partly to mostly sunny, the high today 82, mostly fair tonight, the low 59, and the warm-up continues tomorrow and Saturday, mostly sunny both days, the high tomorrow 84, the high Saturday at 86. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 73 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
It's just like the NCAA to tangle the Twinkie in front of you and know that it, instead of filled with cream, it's filled with a carrot. I don't like carrots. They're gross. I have bad eyesight too, so it pays off. The NCAA, during our conversation with Joey, announced some new rules for the upcoming 2022 seasons that will take effect. And the most prominent of which is in games that have instant replay, when a targeting foul occurs in the second half, the carryover penalty of sitting out the first half of that player's next game will be eligible for further appeal. That sounds incredible. That sounds like, hey, maybe we're on the fast track to that not being a thing, because it is one of the dumbest rules in all of sport. And we're talking about college football here. There's a lot of dumb rules. The very next sentence, the process will begin with the conference submitting a request to the NCAA national, yada, 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 who will review the video of the play. If it is obvious that a player was incorrectly penalized for targeting, the call would be overturned and the player would be cleared to play in the first half of the next game. I ask you, if we already had interview or a replay of the play, why was the player incorrectly called for targeting in the first place? This is a useless appeal system. Because if the referee sees a blatantly not targeting call or a questionable targeting call at best, where it's a situation where the runner ducks his head into the path of the tackler, that guy gets no reprieve that it happened on the first play of the third quarter or the last play of the fourth quarter. It's idiocy. Downright idiocy. We come to the next rule change. It's about blocking below the waist. Panel approved a proposal to improve safety and simplify the rules governing blocking below the waist. Proposal will allow blocking below the waist only by linemen and stationary blocks, stationary backs inside the tackle box. Outside the tackle box on scrimmage plays, blocking below the waist will be prohibited. We saw that in the NFL last year. It worked out pretty well, though it was kind of bizarre because it did impact defensive players, which in some cases when plays spilled to the outside, it was a defensive back's responsibility to cut below the waist of an offensive lineman rather than getting absolutely slaughtered by him. And it was kind of an effort to help the injury risk of offensive linemen. So it's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situations. Anyway, other rule changes include defensive holding will remain a 10-yard penalty, but will always carry an automatic first down. It's my least favorite rule in all of football. By far. Defensive holding should not be an automatic first down. It should be 5 yards and not an automatic first down. I will take that to my grave because I know it ain't ever changing. I hate it. Absolutely hate it. And the Kenny Pickett rule has been approved. If a ball carrier simulates a feet first slide, officials will declare the runner down at that spot. That reminds me of a TikTok I saw where a guy who just can't understand football says, well, what if you stack them on top of each other? They say that's against the rules. He said that means somebody tried. Kenny Pickett tried, he got away with it, and they changed the rules. And now, no matter what, if he's a bust in the NFL or not, he's going down in college football history for one of the craziest plays we've ever seen, was praised at his Heisman ceremony, and nobody can ever do it ever again. It's only for Kenny Pickett. That'll do it for today. The Jay Barker Show is coming up next. I'll see y'all tomorrow. Take it easy. Roll Tide. From everybody here at Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama sports.
Thank you for